Oak session number 14898, reel 9.
Mr. Customs, reel 9. If you were telling me that the battalion eventually arrived at the camp at Tarrant.
Yes, and followed by this friend of mine, Gordon Bryant, who was on his route, en route from somewhere or another, and who developed spots on his hands and body. And they checked up as to where he'd been, and found one or two other people with similar sort of spots, whereupon that was immediately panic stations, and I think the whole brigade of us had to be vaccinated. They thought it was smallpox. However, he was shoved into an isolation hospital. They cleared the entire hospital out, and they thought it was quiet in the morning, and they looked out, and eventually a nursing orderly came along and looked in their tent, so there you are in there. And they said, well, what's going on? And then he told them what they were suspected of carrying smallpox. He still, to this day, carries his discharge certificate, which in red ink, deadly state, possibly inkset, but it's not smallpox, but I remember the chaos that was caused at the time.
Did they ever work out what it actually was?
Well, he put on his discharge, possibly insect bites. However, from Taranto, our move to Palestine, where we were supposed to be off, was cancelled, and within a short space of time, we were taken back up to Bari, and loaded into Liberators, and we were then en route for Athens.
Did you have any warning of this?
Well, we knew very, very, very little, because at that time things were getting becoming difficult in Athens with the ELAS trying to take over. And at that particular time, we had a little bit of the port in Piraeus. And most of Athens was occupied by the ELAS, but we were still hanging on to just the middle of it. And we could get in, the aircraft could get in and out of the airport in Athens, but some of them were coming under rifle fire, but the day we got in, or possibly machine gun, the day we went in, there was nothing. So then we stayed there down at at Fowleran, which is the end of the main road. It's a small beach port there. The road, I can't think of the name of the road, it goes straight up into the centre of Athens. Stuff was going up and down. It was usually armoured cars that would go up into Athens that way. Well, then we started clearing the next day, more or less street by street, up into an area of Athens called New Smyrna, or locally known as Nes Meraz, where a lot of people were kicked out of Smyrna by the state, by the Turks, back in the 20s, had settled. Well,
did you get any briefing about the political background on your way to Athens?
Well, before we left, we were all giving little handbooks of various phrases and so forth, and also little do's and don'ts, and one of them was never get involved in Greek politics, which is quite true. And however, we were reasonably well treated. They had virtually nothing. And I remember Christmas Day, what was that, 44, we were on biscuits and bully, and the children had been literally starving, I suppose, and you go and get your rations, and you'd have a crowd of kids as you came away from the cookouts, with kids following, shouting, "Biscuit Johnny, Biscuit Johnny," and they did look really starving. I mean, say they hadn't had much. There were literally nothing at all for a long time, I think. Then the UNRWA relief organization started to get stuff in, and I don't know, a lot of this stuff would come from Canada. Whether the Germans had allowed some of it to come in or not, I can't remember. But eventually, of course, Churchill and Anthony Eden went out. I think this was just about Christmas or Boxing Day. And they had this meeting at in the British Embassy, which resulted in the Archbishop Damaskinos taking over the duties of regent.
You said you landed at the airport near Piraeus.
Mm-hmm. And then you well, no, it's near Phalerum, actually. Yes. Piraeus is that, yeah.
Sorry. You moved into Athens with support from armoured cars.
Well, no, we had literally nothing in support of us. Mm-hmm. But I say armoured cars went up periodically, I think, into the centre of Athens. Oh. You see, they were nothing. They were nothing to do with us.
Were they a British armoured car?
Oh yes, yeah.
And when you clear, you said you were clearing the.
Well, yes.
Area street by street. Did you encounter any opposition?
Occasional bit of sniper fire. Very very little really. Although in one place we did happen to lose two were killed, and one or two I think were injured. But I think one of them was killed. It was really partly his own fault, in a way.
Why was his own fault? What did he do with it?
Well, I don't know the exact details of it. It's what I remember his body being brought back and someone expressing a position and an opinion of what they thought had happened. But, exactly the details, I don't know.
Did you see the snipers or were you?
No, we were just shot at. The nearest I came to it, we were in one position where we handed over, I think, to the West Kents, and I was pointing out the position of where they were, where I had my section, and towards a school, as far as I can remember. It was some distance away, and we were lying behind an apple tree. And I'd say it was one of the nearest shots that it was too close for comfort. I don't think even a German had got a bit as near as that to me.
Did you actually manage to catch any of the snipers?
No, we didn't say what happened, you see. I can't remember it. I can't recollect exactly what agreement was made, but the ELAS pulled out of Athens. And after then we started to move up through the centre of Greece. We got into a village there, I think it was called, as far as I can remember, it was up, we went out through Thebes, or Thebes as the Greeks would refer to it, and towards Lamia, I think. And this village was off the beaten track, and of course you get into these villages and one was regarded with a certain amount of suspicion, and you know, when they knew that they were going to be all right, we weren't going to shoot them up or anything like that, as probably would have happened if a load of Germans had arrived there. And this particular village, we were very lucky and felt, you know, their hospitality they tried, which was really embarrassing. They had this meal stuff, corn, I don't know exactly what it was, which I think had come from Canada, the sort of some concoction of maize, I think, which they used to brew up with, mix up with oil. And they insisted that we were their guests, and every night they'd bring a bolt of this stuff in, and honestly it was absolutely revolting. We used to say, oh, thank you very much, and efkasto poli, and so on, and then discreetly chuck the stuff away. And once a week they would make bread, one of these beehive oven type of things, which they used to put faggots in and set fire to it and shove the bread in and then seal it up again. And they would always insist that we had a loaf of bread. I mean, say, these people were really starving themselves, but
Were you able to give them anything in return?
Well, cigarettes, chocolate, and a few razor blades and stuff like that. That's about all that we could give. We had this chocolate, which was supposed to replace certain vitamins that you wouldn't normally have. I mean, they used to get the kids have that. Everywhere, I don't think everyone was probably, as regards a section, as lucky as we were.
Were you in defensive positions at this
point? Well, you were in the position, I mean, to say that at night we would sort of wander around on sentry go, and that was about it. There was no one about, nothing ever happened.
You didn't dig in?
Oh, no, no. Oh, no, nothing like that.
Did you see anything of the Greek loyalist forces, the loyalists at all?
No. They were sort of reforming their army. When we got back into Athens and so forth, we had about one to each company. It was one in particular who was they dished him out with a battle dress and things. He was supposed to be an officer who was under sort of a course of instruction, but in my opinion, very good material, but still. It was a start to it.
Why was that? What was
well, this particular bloke, he was not, I wouldn't say illiterate, but I would say that his education wasn't of officer material, I could put it that way. But anyway, they were doing their best. But of course, what happened after we left, I don't know. Another thing was that every company had a Greek interpreter. They were given a battle dress and a hat, cap, and that was about it. I think they were paid. I don't know exactly what the rates of pay were. One in particular, who was the CO interpreter, I think he was a very, very clever man. I think he was a businessman. And through being in New Smyrna, we became very friendly with a lot of these people. In fact, when I went back to Athens, unfortunately, I was going down to New Smyrna to see if there was anyone I could find from those days. But I was warned that the place had changed beyond all recognition. And unfortunately, I couldn't go. We had to come back. My mother had died. This was about 76. I suppose, and the whole thing really in Greece had changed beyond all recognition. In those days, it was practically medieval, I suppose you could class it as. And you got a few miles outside of Athens, and all the men were wearing these tight pants and little skirt affairs, and all that had gone. Well, the first thing I noticed, they're all wearing jeans. Some of the women too. I noticed only one. You would all see the women on a mule, all done up in black and so forth. And I only saw one woman outside of Athens who was still dressed in that way. The thing was that I noticed that more and more of the Roman alphabet seemed to be creeping in rather than Cyrillic alphabet. You'd see a sign of a village. It would be in both alphabets.
When you came back from the centre into Athens, how long were you out in the country?
Well, we had a couple of spells out there. We finished up in... one place we moved, I can't think where we were. Most of the time was up in Lamia, which is beyond the path of Thermopylae, and Tricola, Larissa, in that area. And then we came back from, I can't think exactly where it was, to Chalcis. Chalcis is an island which is on the eastern side of Greece, which is attached by a bridge to the mainland, and we were there for some little while, and which was really more or less a communist town. And although there was a quite a large number of royalist supporters, and the football match was arranged. That's how these things were usually resolved, and I think we beat them 3-2. And the communists lined up one side, one down one side, and the royalists the other. The other thing I was going to mention was one village before we got there we were in, and I can remember that all the men were sat, there wasn't a sign of a girl anywhere, along a wall in the centre of the village, just looking at us, just wondering, I think, what was going to happen. And then we all split up and allocated at various houses, and again they realised that we were all right, nothing to be afraid of. And of course in that time, they still do it, they might do it in some country places, that all the women were spinning yarn all the time on a sort of a stick with a twirling the stuff away. And I remember the house we were in, an old boy, they had an awful boil on the back of his neck, and he was walking around in almost an agony, and I said, well, get him down the MI room. So someone took him down there, and the MO treated this boil, whether he danced it or whatever he did, but he came back with this whacking great lump of cotton wool on the back, which his wife promptly whipped off his neck and put it on her.
Spin it.
Oh dear. And then
did you encounter any serious hostility in the communist town? No,
we didn't. No, that came later. Okay. I think, after we'd gone, or after I'd gone anyway, when they had there was a general sort of uprising. They came back, I remember, on just after VE Day. I went back to Athens on leave. I must have been there for about a week, I suppose.
What was there to do in Athens by way of entertainment?
Well, there was bars, cinemas, you name it. And of course, all the various sites, the Acropolis and so forth. And, there was always plenty to do. Naffy were well in there. And on top of that, we had our own divisional restaurant, which was known as the Dutch Cheese. Hence the divisional sign, if you remember. And I think there were a small proportion was deducted from everyone's ration every day. So when you were in Athens, I think you had a ticket or something. I forget exactly what the drill was now. You could always get a meal. Yeah, yeah. Orchestra and so forth. Life was quite happy there. having been back there, I was surprised. Well, some of University Street, I think it was, some of the buildings had disappeared, and some look exactly as they same. The building that Naffy had, which I think possibly may have been a hotel at some stage, rather, it wasn't a hotel now, but that was still there. And the cinema, almost opposite, I think it was called the Rex, and I remember seeing Charles Laughton and Jamaica Inn there. And at the top of the street where you go round into Constitution Square, that had changed a bit. And I remember walking up through the Plaka, which in those days was most up to the Parthenon, was an area of really dilapidated slums. Well, today it's one of the tourists' high spots, I believe, still.
Did you stay in... when did you actually leave Greece then?
Well, they're coming up to that now. We moved back, I can't think where exactly we were, up near... Well, the usual place, up near Cheka and Larissa, and a camp really out in the wilds. And I remember we were there... It must have been April, it was before VE Day, because we had a big map up with the whole, practically the whole of Europe, with the Russian positions and our positions, which were getting nearer and nearer. And just suddenly spring, after Easter, we moved out. We were in a village. We came out, and it was really beautiful. The weather was really perfect. And all this wild sage, wild flowers of all descriptions came out in bloom. It was really beautiful. And then almost as quickly as it came, so it went, almost overnight with the heat. And we used to walk about a mile or so, a little bit more than that maybe, to a river. And we used to just lie in this river to try and cool off. Well, from there we came down near Lamia, and there was a right by the sea. I can't even think of the name of this place. It was the Gulf of something or other, and it was a beautiful spot. And then the thing came, the bomb dropped, and we were all put of a certain age group, ready to move.
This was on the 6th of August. I
said as a matter of sort of expression, the bomb dropped on us, you see, really. Oh. We were quite happy. We didn't particularly want to move, but there were quite a lot of us, you see. So, right, you're ready now for the Far East. That's where we thought we would end up. But prior to that, we went, I can't think exactly what the date was. It must have been June, I suppose. Middle of June, something like that. And we went down to Athens again, and we were in a camp attached to the Somersets then, at, for rations at Fulagmeni, which was in those days a really beautiful spot, and today it's a mass of hotels. And we were there for about a fortnight, and then they moved us down to Piraeus, and on board this old tub, which was called the Almazora. And we were greeted on board by the crew with open arms, because they were the first British troops they'd seen in months. They'd been taking, their last journey was to Odessa, taking Russian prisoners of war back, and probably were immediately shot, I expect. And then we went back to Naples. And then we found ourselves with the West Kents. And we moved out to this camp, Lamy Camp, I think it was called, which was the sort of so between Naples and Sorrento.
How did you get on with the West Kents? But they weren't light infantry, were they?
Oh, well, no, it didn't matter who was there. You were just infantry. You happened to be light infantry. It made no difference. who you were. You didn't march into the line at 140 to the minute. But anyway, I was quite happy down there for a while. Well, we've nothing to do all day long, except you go to a place called the Natura Nunziata, which today I understand is full of mafia and all sorts of crimes you can imagine. And we just sat on the beach and swam, and Pompeii was just down the road. And then eventually we moved and into Naples and boarded the Georgic. Then the voyage back to UK, to Liverpool, whereupon we were shunted across the country to Louth. And then a couple of days there, we were given leave, and home we came. And, that, I can remember, the day we disembarked was the day of the general election. So I can't remember exactly when that was. It must have been July. Well, then we had 28 days leave. It was supposed to be 28 disembarkation, and 14 days disembarkation, 14 days embarkation. We thought, well, here we go. Reported back to Louth. They dropped the atom bomb. When would you say it was? The 28th?
6th of August.
6th of August, yeah. Well, then the move, as we expected, was suddenly cancelled.
How did you feel about that when you heard about the bomb and the cancellation move?
Well, it didn't worry me. Well, I mean, say it was cancelled, and we thought, well, that's it. That's the end of it. It doesn't really rather. Thank God that we didn't have to face the thing as an enemy in Malaya. And, well, for some reason or other, around about that time, the West Kent Battalion was a most disorganized thing. Well, a couple of us got together and said, well, they haven't got any organization here. We'll become the intelligence section, you think? So it worked.
This is your personal initiative.
Oh, yes. Anyway, that was more or less accepted. But they said, right, you and you, I said, okay, go, and there were so many of us, go up to Helmsley in Yorkshire. And the crowd that were in Helmsley in Yorkshire came down and to Louth and formed, they became, I can't think what battalion it was, of the Hampshire Regiment. Well, we were lucky, really, in a way. We didn't think it at the time. There were two of us, I think, that's all was left of this so-called intelligence section, and then we still said, well, we were. And eventually we had sort of reinforcements from somewhere or another arrived on the scene. And this must have been getting on to about the beginning of December. I'd been on a couple of leaves, I think. And the thing was that, right, Gibraltar. We stayed as we West Kents. And the other lot down in Louth became Hampshire's, and they went to Palestine. Well, of course, at that time, the Jewish problem was beginning to brew up. And as I say, in December we went out and to Gibraltar, and for the next 12 months I had quite an enjoyable time. I must say, I thought, well, I've done my share now, I can see what I can work. And I could wear civilian clothes, I could go in and out of Spain more or less when I wanted to. I met some very good friends, and particularly one who was in field security. And I was in La Linea one night in a bar, and the adjutant who said, you know who you're with? And I said, yes, I know him. You know what he is. And so he was rather frightened, I think, that I was going to say something or do something that I shouldn't. However, and then I went on leave to Jerez and Seville. That was quite enjoyable, and it was rather interesting because there's another fellow there who I knew what he was, and he was just keeping his eyes and ears open. But prior to that, our duties there in Gibraltar, it was very interesting. I was responsible for so many miles of the galleries and so on, see
in the
rock, and also apart from that, we still had an OP up on the north face with telescopes. We had one in Moorish Castle Barracks as well, and keeping a daily note on what was going on the other side. It's one of those things that was a hangover from the war. And it was still, at the time I left, it was still being manned, and daily, weekly reports going in.
On the other side, you mean on the other side of the
frontier?
Of the frontier,
yeah.
Keeping an eye on
Valdivia. Yeah, and, the telescope, one of them we had, one in particular, you could read car number plates quite easily over the border.
So we wanted to keep a detailed log?
Yeah.
What you saw?
What we saw, yeah.
What were you looking out for, cars or for people or for anything
in
particular?
We might get the tip off to look for a certain car or something like that, mainly seeing what their troopmen were doing. Of course, the Spaniards fortified the what was known as the neutral ground, we pinched our bit to extend the airstrip, and it was quite amazing at times. You'd see a squad being brought out there on parade and arms drill and so forth, and suddenly the NCO were in charge would pull a bloke out of the ranks and drag him round the back of a pillbox and give him a beating up.
It sounds as though it was quite easy for you to go into Spain.
Oh, it was. It was, yeah.
And the atmosphere was all right when you were there.
Oh, yes, yeah. I remember coming back and buying the day I was coming back, I wanted a bottle of brandy, so I rang my field security friend up. I heard I want a bottle of Soberano brandy. He said, "Oh, I'll go and get it for you." And I watched him through the telescope go across the border, because he was riding a motorcycle with civilian number plates on over the border, and I could follow him nearly all the way and see him bring it back.
Presumably, his function was mainly counterintelligence.
Oh yeah, well it had been,
Were there Spanish agents?
Well, I think they knew everyone. In fact, I got a friend. I was one chap I had with me. He was in field security during the war, and they knew who to watch for. And they watched the Spanish consul who came daily across the border.